This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the ball on the show.
Not getting much support for my Jim Crane is an evil genius theory. We might have to run that by Michael Bumpus here in a little bit. But first, we get to some football. Blue 42, Michael Bumpus in with us.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Michael, how are you now?
Gallant, I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful on this fine morning, sir. Okay, Nate Burleson.
What the hell?
Listen, we're speaking to each other like proper gentlemen.
Formally? I demand satisfaction.
My lord, I have a question for you. Nate Burleson, former wide receiver, I think he does a fantastic job on the NFL Network, had some really complimentary things to say about DK Metcalf yesterday. Here he is.
Well, it's going to take me just a second to get there, Paul. I'm going to need to buy some time.
Okay.
Here I am. I'm almost there. I've almost
got
it.
Speak to us in a British accent.
Nope. I'm not going to do that. But
why not?
Here it is. Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf.
He's going to make the big plays. But the reason that DK Metcalf can do it all is because when they're far away from the red zone, he can catch that long ball. But then when they get close to the red zone, he is such a big frame that who do you think Russell Wilson going to look for? The tallest guy on the field with the most hops on the field. That's DK Metcalf.
That is DK Metcalf. What do you expect from him, Nate?
Because quarterbacks are creatures of habit. So whatever they did the previous year, they'll lean on that. Now, even though you have Sterling Shepard and Golden Tate, Daniel Jones, when he drops back, it's almost nature to go back to what worked last season. Darius Slayton, I'm going to throw it to him because I know he can catch it. Russell Wilson, seemed like every time he threw it to DK Metcalf, aside from a few drops, he was coming up with a big play.
Again, Nate, how much is he going to do this year?
DK Metcalf had 900 yards. He was cooking, getting busy, did his thing, right? 7 touchdowns, a really decent year. And you remember that wild card playoff game? He put up a buck 60. It's like, okay, all right, that's the most by a rookie in the wild card game in the Super Bowl era. So we're like, this guy has promise. But I'm going to double his touchdowns and say he's going to have 1,200 yards. So for me, I'm saying DK Metcalf will have 1,200 yards and 14 TDs. He only had 7, guys.
14 TDs?
14 TDs.
Bob's making some faces right now. Ooh. He's got some real expectations on him for year two. How do you live up to those expectations, especially when you have the rookie season that DK did?
First, big ups Nate Burleson. I played with him. He took me under his wing when I was with the Seahawks. So, Nate, do your thing. Two, the sophomore year scares me when it comes to any type of athlete, especially when you have that big rookie season, because now it's like there are expectations now. Now you have some pressure. DK came in. He had a little bit of pressure, but everyone was knocking him. He can't run this route. He can't run that route. For Nate to expect 14 touchdowns, I think is a bit much. I would say around 8 or 9 again. I mean, you have 8 or 9 touchdowns, you could be a Pro Bowler. He had 900 yards last year. I get him around 1,000 yards. But, you know, Nate's an all-pro receiver. I don't know if he's all-pro, but, you know, he was one of the top receivers in the league at some point. So I respect his opinion. For me, I would say a successful season for DK Metcalf would be around 1,000 yards, 8 or 9 touchdowns. Let's not forget, there's a guy named Tyler Lockett on the other side of the football that's going to get the rock, who they're going to feature as well. So, if DK does have 1,200 yards, 14 touchdowns, he's a Pro Bowler all day. But I would lower expectations just a bit. And if he exceeds expectations, then it's all good and we can celebrate.
I have heard a lot of different wide receivers get praised in Seattle and talk about the DK Metcalf's work ethic has gotten the highest praise of any player that I can remember. It's from Pete Carroll. It's from Russell Wilson. It's from people around the team. It's tough sometimes to differentiate between like what is just somebody saying something nice to build someone's confidence and when it is earnestly people are impressed by him. People bump out there love DK Metcalf.
Yeah, and I hear the same things. He works hard. He's a good guy, blue-collar type dude. The thing about receiver is you depend on so much to go right for you to be successful. You got to get the snap. QB has to get the read. You got to run the right route. The coverage has to be right. So there's a lot of things that happens for a receiver to be successful. And his worth ethic is definitely going to help him in that sense. But it's just a lot to ask for a second-year receiver to not only duplicate what he did his first year, but to exceed it. So I think it's a possibility. I think now it all comes down to Schottenheimer. Does Schottenheimer go into the film room into when they start doing strategy and scheme and stuff, and do they say, hey, we're going to highlight DK Metcalf? If you highlight DK Metcalf, you take away from Tyler Lockett, who has been Mr. Reliable the last couple of years. So what type of approach are they going to take with this offense next year?
Now, we've been friends for a little while, guys. We've been doing this for 5 months or so. You guys can be honest. My 2 minute drill was awful when I was trying to buy time to get to the Nate Burleson sound.
That was atrocious. You threw three interceptions.
I didn't throw three interceptions. I didn't turn the ball over because I kept talking. Dead air is an interception, but I can admit that I really wasted some time. Like, if everybody else was the coach, I'd be up there barking out signals. They're like, snap it, throw the ball in the ground. Come on, what are you doing?
A couple of delay of games.
A little clock management. It's all good, though.
Had some issues for sure. Question two. All right, Myles Garrett has been reinstated by the NFL. And we all remember him removing the headpiece of Mason Rudolph, Steelers quarterback, swinging it. And it wasn't a bloop. It was a trying to cave his noggin. He's now explained what happened. He, in an interview with Mina Kimes of ESPN, he talked about what precipitated that.
I mean, he called me the N-word. He called me a stupid N-word. I don't say the N-word, whether it's, you know, with A, E-R. To me personally, just shouldn't be said. And whether it's known by family, friends, anyone. And I don't want to use it because I don't want to, you know, find that appropriate around me for anyone to use.
He said and clarified that he didn't speak about it after the incident because he didn't want to use it as an excuse for his actions. I find what Myles Garrett is saying believable. And if he said he heard it, it kind of explains how mad he got. But I also don't necessarily think, if the NFL couldn't find evidence of it, I don't think they should have punished Mason Rudolph just based on Myles Garrett's word. I see this as something that happened on the field, and Myles Garrett's doing his best to explain sort of what precipitated a really violent reaction on his part.
This is a complicated situation. For those of you who don't know, I'm a black man, African American. And if you call me that N-word, you're going to see a side of me that no one ever sees, especially on the football field. So his reaction, it lines up to what he is saying. Like, he called me this, so I reacted this way. But if I'm in his situation and I get caught that, you're going to know that person called me that. Off top. That's the first thing I'm going to say. Like, look, this is why this went down, because he called me that. I almost assume that's what happened, because all things I hear about Myles Garrett, and I see him, like, he's a calm dude. Like, he doesn't seem like he's irrational. So for him to come out now, I just don't know what to feel about. I feel like it could be true, and he could be trying to just get back in the league and say, hey, I'm going the desperate measures, I'm going to say this. But, you know, and then you say the NFL had evidence. Do they hear everything that goes on in a football field? I doubt that. There's 22 guys on the football field at some point, every snap. And then at some point, there could be 11 conversations going on, 11 interactions going on. Can they hear everything? I just don't think that's realistic. But if he says it, he sounds believable. He sounds like a smart guy, an intelligent guy. I don't think that he would try to throw Mason Rudolph under the bus like that, because that's a big allegation. I mean, you don't just throw that out there. You know what I mean? You're testing and questioning a guy's character and who he is. So you have to kind of go with what he says. The NFL is saying, oh, we didn't find any evidence. Come on, man. I mean, shucks. It's too much going on for them to really figure it out. So I can just talk about me. If that happened, I'm letting everybody know off top exactly what was said and why I reacted the way I did.
If I were a prosecuting attorney, that's really the only way that you could, I think, look at this situation. And you just have to piece things together, and you would leave it to the jury. I would leave it to our audience right now. But here are all the things that you can add up. First off, Myles Garrett said this originally when he met with the NFL and talked about this incident. It was leaked. I don't think he thought it was something that was going to become public. I don't know why everyone sort of kept it like closed doors on this front, but it did feel like there was a vibe that he had said something to make him lose his mind. It wasn't just that Mason Rudolph was grabbing him. Mason Rudolph was fined $50,000. He appealed that fine. I mean, he got beaten up. He did not get any of that money back. So that's another thing there. Mike Tomlin, in his press conference after the game, seemed angry at Mason Rudolph for his play. And you have to wonder if it was a little bit extra. And there weren't really that many Steeler players that were standing up for Mason Rudolph after the fact. So I'm not going to make an accusation. I think it's one of the most damning accusations you can make in 2020 is to call someone a racist or to accuse them of having said something racist. But there's a lot of things that I feel like should at the very least be considered red flags on Mason Rudolph's front.
Yeah, it's a sticky situation. When it comes down to he said, she said stuff, you know, who really knows?
No one knows, exactly.
You don't know. So you just have to stick to your guns. In the NFL, I feel like they did. And for Myles Garrett to come out now and say it, I mean, that's the path he chose. He chose to kind of come out later and say that. And however you want to handle this situation, it's up to you. I can only speak of how I would have handled that situation. It'd be a little different, but I wasn't in that situation. You know, I'm not in that organization. I don't know who he was talking to, who advised him. So there's a lot of layers to this. Either way it goes, he's back in. Mason Rudolph is still employed, and the show must go on.
Question three.
So, Jameis Winston's getting LASIK surgery because he has basically needed contacts, which he weared when he played, which he wore when he played baseball. Weared.
What was your SAT score on the English part?
720.
Again?
What?
What was he wearing?
He was wearing contacts when he was a pitcher for Florida State. But when he was a quarterback, he never wore them. This is something that Jimbo Fisher brought up like 7 years ago. Something he never changed. So apparently Jameis Winston is going to look into getting LASIK surgery. Do you think that this could change things on the field for old Jameis?
It might. You know, it might change some things. I'm supposed to wear glasses. I'm supposed to wear contacts. I just don't like doing it because contacts are a pain in the butt getting in. Glasses will make me look older. I'm already aging. I got gray in my beard. I'm not trying to look older than I am right now. Will it help him see the football field? Probably, but will it help his decision making? I don't know. I mean, it comes down to decision making, right? It's not can you see? Is I'm sure you can see the dark jersey and the light jersey, but are you making the right decisions at that point? So maybe it'll help. Instead of throwing 30 interceptions, he might throw 25 next year. I'll give him 5 less interceptions due to LASIK.
I like the idea that if you were undergoing LASIK, like when Winston's going into that, he's like, hey, Doc, can you go take a look and fix me brain? I need some help with my Abdullah Alangata, my decision-making nexus.
I honestly might need some help with that, given my English errors earlier in this segment.
Here's the reason I wouldn't do it. No. If I did it and I was Jameis Winston, I wouldn't tell a soul that I had it done. I would make the doctor swear to secrecy. I would not tell a single person that I'd had it done because I wouldn't want chuckleheads like us talking about it afterwards. Like, oh, do you think now that he got his eyes fixed, he'll be a better quarterback?
But I, honestly, I would feel I feel optimistic that he will be slightly better. He squints when he throws it. We were just making fun of Jimmy Garoppolo closing his eyes when he throws the football. I mean,
what if he gets LASIK and throws 32 interceptions?
Exactly.
Well, he'll see those interceptions a lot more clearly.
What, do you think that it was a situation where he's like running around there and he's like, oh, I think that's Cameron Braid. I think that's Cameron. Crap, it's the opposing linebacker. No, it's not.
Maybe he's colorblind.
Maybe.
That's Brock. Brock was colorblind. Should they test quarterbacks like fighter pilots? Like at age 13, you know whether or not they're capable of doing that? Like, no, son, your skill set's more suited to defensive end.
I didn't even really think about that. Wow.
All these uniforms look brown to me. I can't tell.
So for Brock, like playing any teams that like wore red or green, would that be an issue? Is that how it works?
Yes, he could usually tell. He can usually tell based on that it's white. You see white, and one team's usually wearing white. There was a game a couple years ago on Thursday night.
Bills
and
Jets.
I think it, Bills Jets. And they
Bills
were both
red,
one
Jets
was in
green.
And Brock said that would have been a nightmare for him because he would have had to been looking at the helmets that it was different shades, which is actually interesting. Like if afterwards he's like, what do you want from me? I'm colorblind.
Jameis Winston's put in his contract, whenever I play, it's a color rush. You get the bright color, solid color, so it's easy for him to figure out who's who.
It'd be like watching highlighters run around. That is Blue 42. Michael Bumpus is in with us for the next hour. Bump, I believe that you heard my case to be made that Jim Crane is the evil genius for his inept apology yesterday. We talked a little bit about Astros apologies earlier this week. What did you make of Crane's whole performance?
It was interesting. I listened to the guy talk. You guys talk about it. He says it didn't impact the game. 55 seconds later, he says, I didn't say that. He seemed like a guy who didn't really care. He's like, whatever. You know, it is what it is. They're not taking away our ring. We've gotten rid of a couple guys. I'm not going to punish the athletes, and the show must go on. And in his position, if he's going to stand there and take the bullets for the team, I can completely appreciate that. You stand, you're the leader. You run the organization. You stand in front of the fire, and you take all the bullets. I can appreciate that. But he just didn't sound very smart. And for someone to be so rich and not sound very smart, it makes me question, how did you get this rich? You know, what did you do to make all this dang money? Now, I'm sure if you look up his wiki or you go through his history, he's probably a great businessman. But he just didn't sound very smart. And if you're the leader of an organization and you come off as a guy who's incompetent, it just does, it rubs me the wrong way. So it is what it is, man. I mean, I'm over it at this point. I'm like, man, they cheated. MLB is not going to do anything. So let's move on.
It's a tricky situation, though, to actually put yourself in the shoes of. And the other thing that I've just been feeling coming out of this, and I hate to feel this way because it sort of goes against just how I was raised and how I act. I apologize perhaps too much. And I feel that an apology when you do something wrong is usually necessary. But in the world of sports and in the world of public opinion, for something like this, I almost wonder, what do you actually accomplish when something like this goes down and you apologize? Because I don't think that anyone, when it's something that is as severe as the accusations and obvious things that happened with the Houston Astros of cheating, people are going to not feel any better if you apologize. And I wonder about their just general strategy going into yesterday, which is apparently something that they had been cooking up over a week or so. Like, they had been planning how they were going to handle it, and we saw how it unfolded. It didn't go so well.
It's a formality. You have to do it. Will people really care? I don't know, you know, but if you got caught doing something wrong, the next step is to apologize for that. And that's just how our society works. So at some point they were going to have to come out and say something. I wish they would have done it earlier. As soon as it happened, come out and get it over with. Instead, they wait until spring ball and all that stuff. And I get it. You get all the players together and you devise a plan. This is what we're going to do. And then I forgot the guy's name who's talking with his hand, his fingers touching each other. Like, it just seems so rehearsed. If it was genuine, like the locker room interviews felt genuine. The press conferences were like, okay, these are your points, A, B, and C, and then get the heck out of there.
Do you guys really feel that we're that far away? Back in, like, the 1700s, the 1600s, guys would be put in stocks if they had done something wrong, and they would basically be in front of the crowd, like, for a couple of days, just there, just in complete shame. It's almost as if we haven't really evolved past that point. We sort of want these guys to put themselves out in the public and just sit there and marinate it and take it all in and take the tomatoes and lettuce and whatever we might end up throwing at them. We just do it now through social media.
Yeah, that's human nature, right? That's just who we are. And it is what it is. I at this point, I'm just tired of hearing about it. You know, I mean, nothing has happened. So forget it. I mean, guys have gotten fired, I guess. But other than that, it is what it is. MLB is not going to do anything.
The trophy is still with the Astros.
They still got rings. They're still going to sit their grandkids on their lap and say, in 2017, we got away with the greatest scandal at all of baseball. And look what I got. I got a ring out of this deal. I mean, it doesn't change anything.
Let me tell you, we had a pitcher, and he was sitting in the hallway to the clubhouse, and he was watching on TV. When the catcher put down a number two for a curveball, he'd say, hey, Jimmy, hit the trash can twice to let him know what curve is coming.
I like your old guy voice.
Yeah. Sean Manaea. And this is kind of the next layer of this, because whether or not we accept apology or what we think of it, that's really just public perception. I do think that there's a question of how other players will react. And I was a little bit surprised to hear Sean Manaea, who's a pitcher with the Oakland A's. He's pretty forceful about it.
They cheated. They've cheated the game. They've cheated us as players. And it's that they can't take responsibility for their actions and try to make things better. And so they're just sweeping things under the rug and, you know, just doing their own thing. And to me, that just doesn't sit right.
Baseball has its own regulating process. Guys will take out. I think it'll be interesting to see how Astros players are treated And not just, oh, are people going to headhunt them and how many hit by pitches, though? I will be counting that. I think it'll be interesting to see, are they viewed as pariahs within the game by their peers? Because you hear something like that from Manaea, and it kind of goes against this idea, well, you know, everybody's kind of doing it. It kind of sounds like, no, there are some people in the game that feel that that team specifically was the one that was doing this.
Whenever your integrity is questioned, it kills who you are, you know? And for these peers, these guys who compete against these guys, who go to war with their teammates to try to get this trophy, it's all about the trophy. It's all about winning. It's all about the accolades. And you get the highest accolade in your sport, and you do it by cheating, of course guys are going to feel a certain way, especially guys who feel like they've done it the right way, guys who don't steal signs, guys who don't take PEDs, you know, guys who are just doing it off their natural ability. They feel cheated, and they should feel cheated. But at this point, again, you feel cheated. The MLB doesn't feel like you feel cheated, so they didn't do anything. So, I mean, at this point, you just got to let it go. Now, the thing that I kind of appreciate about baseball is that you can get revenge, and guys are going to throw out these dudes. You know, I just think about Altuve. When he hit that home run to seal the game, I'm like, and he's holding his jersey to make sure no one rips it off. And I'm thinking, I'm like, does he hit that bomb if he doesn't have help? You know, and that's what guys are thinking. You know, and I'm a Dodger fan too. So, and you beat my Dodge. I mean, there's just so many layers to this. It is what it is. It's wrong. And I understand why guys feel cheated. But go ahead and get your revenge. Baseball doesn't police that thing. Go ahead and get it. If baseball isn't going to really take a stand and be like, look, if you throw out these guys, we're really going to get out after you and kick you out of the game, then do what you got to do. It is what it is.
I get Manaea's perspective on this, too. Imagine being on the Oakland A's. You've been that close to being the AL West champions all these years in a row. It's an uphill battle as it is. You play in a stadium where there's sewage constantly leaking into your dugout, and you ultimately keep on coming up second fiddle to this Astros team. And you could make an argument that maybe you would have to go back and like point at specific things, but maybe the A's could have won the division one of those years. They had some really, really good Augusts over the last couple of seasons where they were able to, at times, I think even overtake the Astros in the American League West for a brief period of time. I think in 2017 they might have. I get his perspective on that front. And I can understand why a lot of these guys are like, If this had been policed more properly, maybe my career, maybe one of my seasons goes differently. And for a team like the A's, which just doesn't have the same kind of funds that a team like the Astros does, I actually do feel sympathetic towards them because it is basically an extreme mountainous climb for a team like that to actually win a title.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Danny. Go for it, Danny.
It's Danny and Gallant. We've got Wheel of Non-FL is coming up next, and it includes – well, the kind of player that you can never bring yourself to root for on your team, because Kendrick Perkins has a pretty funny one. We've got that and some Marshawn Lynch sound next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant. We've got Michael Bumpus in with us for this hour of the show. We're talking to Ryan Gustafson, president of the XFL Seattle Dragons, who are going to have their home opener tomorrow. We'll do that at 9 o'clock. But you ever had where your team acquires a player that you just don't ever like? And when he leaves, you like him even less than when your team got him. This is our Wheel of Non-FL, where we come up with non-NFL subjects. And Kendrick Perkins, who's a guy that I have some mixed feelings about, but NBA champion, proud member of the Boston Celtics, and someone who during the Celtics telecast last night, I believe they were playing the Clippers, he let loose on his opinions about one player who ended up playing for Boston.
You know, when I was playing for the Celtics, I never really focused on, the crowd or the fans. I was so locked in. But now that I'm an analyst and I'm retired, it's amazing how many Celtics fans there are around the world.
No doubt.
Do you hear these chants right now?
Yeah.
Let's go Celtics. And Kyrie Irving didn't want to play for this franchise. Time I think of that guy, I want to throw him.
In case you couldn't hear,
you can mind the sarcasm.
Every time he thinks of that guy, he wants to throw up. And I will raise my hand. For those who don't know, my basketball team is the Boston Celtics, And I feel that way, too.
Boo.
The you Kyrie, don't like Kyrie?
I could not stand Kyrie Irving. I remember when they brought him in, I was like, the gravity, or excuse me, not the gravity guy. He does believe in gravity, I think. The flat earth guy, we're bringing him in. Okay, let's see how this goes. And then he played pretty well. He gets hurt. All the young players start to play really well when he's not there. They go on a nice little playoff run. The next season he comes back, and it was just terrible. Just absolutely terrible. Clearly no one wanted to play with him. I've never in my life, and I've really liked the Celtics. I think they've had some very likable teams. Danny will disagree with me on this, but I think they've had some really likable.
They've never had a likable team.
They play basketball the way it's supposed to be played. They play tough. They get in your face.
Not once. They are an obnoxious, annoying franchise.
Exactly. That's what I like. Sorry. That's on brand for me. I think a lot of people would say the same thing about me. You know what? They're my spirit animal, if you will. Kyrie Irving being on that team, I felt like Kendrick Perkins. I was so glad, I've never been more glad about a great player leaving where I'm actually, clearly getting the worst end of it as a sports fan, and this guy leaving and not getting anything close to a return for what they lost. I mean, he's one of the best players in the game.
Go Lakers, first off. Let's start off with that. We're talking about Boston. Yeah. Go Lakers all day.
17. More titles than 16.
Yep. Yeah, it's fine.
Whatever you got to tell yourself.
Perkins. I couldn't stand Perkins when he was playing. He seemed like a big bully. You know, looked mad all the time. He looked like a grandpa at 25.
He couldn't play basketball. He couldn't shoot.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a worse version of Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, he was a body out there. As far as Kyrie Irving goes, you cannot deny that he is one of the most skilled basketball players in the NBA. I mean, he can do everything. He can shoot three. He can handle. I mean, his floater's nice. Mid-range jumper's good. But he strikes me as a guy who feels like he has to project himself as the smartest guy in the room every time he's out there. I went to Duke. I mean, first off, what did he go for, a year? You know?
Probably
a semester.
Right.
You know? I get it. You went to Duke. Duke's hard to get into. It's a great basketball program.
It's not as hard to get into if you're a basketball
player. Not if you're a star like him. So I can get why guys. And then it seems like he doesn't take ownership of his flaws or his mistakes. It's always like he's deflecting stuff. If he were to take it on the chin as a leader usually does, as the best player on the team usually does, and I think it'd be different. But he seems like a deflector. You know, he's always trying to point the finger and go elsewhere. And then I just don't like that he projects himself as, I'm smarter than you. Like, dude, man, you went to college for 1 year. Like, I don't doubt that you're smart, but you didn't even finish your 100 level classes. You know what I mean?
All right, Bump, your least favorite Laker ever. Your team has to have employed a player that you might even try and talk yourself into rooting for him, but you know you didn't like that guy. You didn't like that guy when it started, and you really didn't like him by the time it ended.
Smush Parker. I mean, come on. Those were dark ages for the Lakers. Smush Parker. I'm like, dude, where did this guy come from? Why is he on the roster? And just pass the ball to Kobe and get out the way at this point. Smush Parker, man. Probably a good guy. I didn't like him.
For me, it was Swaggy P with the Warriors.
Swaggy Nick P?
Oh, God, I hate Swaggy P. I hate pretty much everything. I hate the way he plays. I hate to just chuck it up from anywhere. Like, the most perfect highlight ever was him jacking a three from about 26 feet, extending both hands like it went in, and then watching it back rim out. He was, dating Iggy Azalea and then got ratted out by D'Angelo Russell. I could not stand Swaggy P. And there was part of me when the Warriors signed him, because that was a point when everybody's like, the Warriors are really smart. They really know what they're getting in this guy. They know what he's going to be able to do. And I was like, God, am I even, if he becomes good with them and I start liking him, that's almost a worst case scenario. And in Seattle, it's a different one, because I feel like Swaggy P was one that I just knew it when I saw it. The guy that I'm going to say next, the guy that I ended up loathing the most, probably the most of any Seattle athlete, is a guy that fully earned that loathing, which was Jeremy Stephens. By the end with Jeremy Stephens, I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, this guy who went to high school here, who played college football at University of Washington, who then was employed by the Seattle Seahawks, who is at this point a documented social menace, who has been arrested in 1, 2, 3. He's been arrested in 4 different states. He's almost been arrested in 10% of the country. Who's like all of the different things that have happened. And now he's married to Hope Solo, who's the Olympic goalie. Oh, yeah, he got arrested for drunk driving in the U.S. women's national team van down in Los Angeles. By the time he was done, I was just like, oh, good riddance. He got kneed in the groin on national TV by Tyler Brayton, who was a defensive end, for the Oakland Raiders, and Brayton ended up getting fined. And I was like, nope, should not fine that man. He did a public service. That was the definition of a victimless crime. In fact, maybe you should fine Jeremy Stevens for groining him in the knee. Maybe that would be a fair punishment for him. I think it's funny when you get a player that just for whatever reason, you just cannot stand. Stevens was it. Swaggy P was it for definitely different reasons.
As a fan, you deal with it in your own way. How do you deal with it when it's a teammate bump?
Teammate. As a teammate, you kind of just, you just look over it. You got to work with this guy. You got to show up every day in the locker room. You just avoid him. Instead of having those random conversations, you walk the other way. You avoid eye contact. It's crazy, though. You could not like a guy off the field. And on the field, it's like you're all together. All right, come on, let's get it. It's an important drive. We got to work together. But soon as you take the jerseys off, it's like you go your way, I go my way. It's just a working relationship.
How clicky are these locker rooms?
Super clicky.
Does it turn into somewhat something out of Mean Girls ever?
No, at least not when I was there. And we sucked when I was with the Hawks, But it was clicky as heck. Like the cornerback, the corners have one corner, receivers have one corner, the linemen are over here. It is what it is. You associate yourself with guys who are kind of like you. So it naturally becomes clicky.
I believe
you were in the locker room with Josh Wilson, Bump,
yeah.
Who was one of the DBs, mm-hmm. Who was universally, he was messy. And the players didn't like how messy he was in his locker. And I remember Rocky Bernard would go and just empty his locker out onto the floor because they felt that he was too messy. He got kicked out of the DB corner of the locker room but for being filthy. And then the defensive lineman tried to disown him. At one point, he was like at a locker in the middle of it. Like he was a man without a country. He was being bounced around the locker room.
I got a Josh Wilson story. It was training camp my second year. And we're doing a drill. It's like a 60% drill. It's almost like a walkthrough. We're doing the drill. And he walks up and is like chokes me out. I'm like, Josh, it's 60%.
What?
Like, what are you doing? Does it again. Boom. I'm like, all right, Josh, 60%. What are you doing? Does it again. And then we just get at it. We're throwing hands. We're tussling. We're doing our thing. It becomes a scrap, right? I walk away from this deal, and the white jerseys for defense at the time, they come up to me and are like, man, I'm so glad you did that, man. We're so tired of this deal. I'm so glad you did that. At the end, me and Josh, we made up. It's all good. But he was not a very likable guy on that football team.
And it's because he took practice too seriously?
I wouldn't say that.
And he was messy.
He's trying to take advantage. I'm a free agent. Like he tried to test me. If he thinks he's superior, he tried to test you. And I'm like, man, you got the wrong one, man. It's not going down.
The other thing is, Paul, here's the reason that it's impossible for me to dislike Kyrie Irving. His godfather is Rod Strickland.
Okay.
Rod Strickland, the god.
Rod
Strickland is the Hooper's Hooper.
Yeah.
Love Rod Strickland.
Well, Rod should tell Kyrie Irving to get off YouTube and stop thinking that he's smarter than everyone because he watched Cougs fan 420 who has a hot take about gravity and the theory of relativity. Like, get out of here.
Is it a gimmick? You think he's just doing that just to mess with people? There's no way he thinks the earth is flat.
They all say this. They all say this afterwards. They're like, oh no, I'm just so smart. I'm just doing a social experiment. No, you're stupid. Like you actually believe this. You something that was found out, discovered in the 1500s, you are like, no, man. I mean, I don't know, man. I've never been in space. Like, oh, okay, so satellite imagery and every single thing that you've seen on the internet that should indicate that this stuff is real. You're just gonna throw that out. But this random YouTuber wearing a hoodie in his mom's basement who has Cheeto dust on his shirt. Yeah, that guy, man, he's the authority. Woohoo!
Do not diminish Cheeto dust. Cheeto dust is delicious. It's Danny and Gallant coming up next. One Rams blogger had a horrific suggestion regarding Tyler Lockett, but it spurred an idea. Which player would you like to see another team cut so you can root for them in peace? Paul's going to tell us next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Just sit back and enjoy Africa for a second. Away from you, babe.
Is this Toto?
I thought, we should play some love songs today. Why not?
Yeah.
Good call, Lydia.
Let's do it.
This is fantastic. Not fantastic, at least per Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett saw this on Twitter. A Rams blogger suggested, and I think he did this in jest, that the Seahawks should cut Tyler Lockett to save cap space. I'm guessing it was done in jest. Otherwise, it's one of the worst takes of all time. And Tyler Lockett.
That's actually a genius idea. Like, if you could go and start doing that and create a whole conversation about it, like, at the very least, it could throw some uncertainty in the whole process.
Yes. And this guy, he threw a lot of uncertainty into the process. Maybe if John Schneider's on Twitter one night looking for creative ideas to address the salary cap, he'd see Sosa K on Twitter and see, the Seahawks should cut Tyler Lockett. It would save them $6.85 million. And Dwayne Brown would save them $3.5 million.
What did Travis Kelce?
Yes.
Come on. You don't cut Tyler Lockett. Get out of here, man. That's clickbait.
Much better quote for Travis Kelce than you've got to fight for your right to party. So I appreciate you going on that front. But it did get me thinking, because Tyler Lockett retweeted this and he said, ouch, with it. If you could get rid of a couple of players in the NFC West so it's easier for you to root for them, who would you pick? For me, I know my number one, and I know you guys all know my love for George Kittle. George Kittle, San Francisco 49ers tight end. You know, George Kittle with his power, with his blocking ability, his ability to catch, I think his authentic joy. I mean, he's the kind of person that would make me get a boombox, hold it up in the air, and play a little Peter Gabriel maybe.
You're definitely taking the Valentine's Day extreme.
Hey George, it's your friend Paul. I've seen you blocking from afar. I've seen that strength and power you put in with your legs. I see you talk about all the things that you've been able to do on the field, and then I look in your eyes and I see a man who deserves better than Jimmy Garoppolo. Hit the post.
Hey police, this is George Kittle. There's a psycho out on my lawn who's holding up a boombox, speaking some inane garbage about how the 49ers should cut me. He's clearly deranged.
George, let Russ throw you a pass.
Okay, it doesn't work without the music in the background. But who would you guys, if there was a player in the NFC West that you would like to root for, that you would like off of their team, you would like released by their team, who would you pick?
I was going to go with George, but since you took that guy, I'm going to go with Sherman, man. You know, because I like Sherman, you know. I like who he is. I like his story, you know. I just don't like that he's wearing the other jersey now, you know. So I got to go with Sherman because, I grew up in California, so I watched a lot of 49er football growing up. Obviously, I'm in the Northwest now, so I'm a little biased, you know. Things have changed a bit in my life. But it would have to be Sherman. Any other jersey, I feel like I'd be all in on Sherman. But because he's, you know, wearing the gold and the red, it's kind of tough.
It is awkward. Because I feel the same way. Like, I've always loved Richard Sherman. But I know pretty much anyone on the San Francisco 49ers, I am basically not allowed to like them anymore. And yet George Kittle
That's
is
correct.
There. And Debo Samuel is there, who I also like. And Richard Sherman
Forget
is
that.
There.
I like Debo. I don't care what anyone says. Debo is legit. I'm going to get my son a Debo Samuel jersey if he wants it. I like Debo.
Okay.
Debo is absolutely aggressive and loves how he runs after the catch. My desire for Sherm back, because I kind of know it was a toxic relationship by the end. And I know, like, as good as he's acting now, if we were back together again, it'd just be crazy again. Like, it's one of those where I'll always feel fondly about that part, but I just don't know if we could ever recapture that. It might be too much. Suggestion, Larry Fitzgerald. Everybody loves the way Larry Fitzgerald plays, right?
Yeah. But he's one of those guys. You know, the Cardinals, they're almost benign, right? I mean,
weren't always.
True. That's
the
true.
Bruce Arian years. The wall was running red. Shut up, Foghorn.
That's true. New sheriff in town. I think it wouldn't be the person I have affection for. It would be the guy that would cause the most problems if he was missing. If you take Aaron Donald off of the Rams, I think he might be, other than Russell Wilson, like non-quarterback division, he might be the single most impactful player in the division. If you took him away from the Rams, I think that the net change, as good as Kittle is, he's the tight end. Like, how much of a difference can he make? And if you take Aaron Donald off of that defense, I think that's a bad defense if he's not there.
If you take Kittle off of the Niners, though, are they the same team? I mean, Kittle is a big play guy, you know?
He is.
He's changed the way I look at tight ends. When's the last time you saw a tight end take a crossing route 50, 60 yards down the field, stiff arm a guy, get face mask, still gain another 15 yards? Like, Kittle is a different type of beast,
man. He out-gronked Gronk on that play, and that's saying something. And there is a difference with Kittle with the way that he runs after the catch. And it's not to say Gronk didn't run over people either, but there is a – almost like he's a fullback – He's Mike Allstott, essentially, from the early 2000s, if anyone remembers him on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He just wants to hit people, and he wants to run people over. I love that side of it. Michael Bumpus.
Paul Gallant.
We always appreciate it when you join us.
Thanks for having me.
It's been really fun to have you in today, Bump. We always have a great time. This has been a really fun week.
Appreciate you guys. See you next time.
We'll see you next week. Michael Bumpus joining us every Wednesday and Friday in the 8 o'clock hour. It is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle. We're going to take a look at something that the Seahawks have to seriously, seriously look at this offseason. But, guys, Seattle Dragons, the home
Dragon
opener
time.
Is, what's the time? Dragon time.
Dragon time.
It is tomorrow, and we are going to talk about them next. Don't go anywhere. Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Ran the football, stuffed the run. The lines of scrimmage were one in red.